OTB Sports Radio.
This Sunday on OTB Sports Radio, we're bringing you an exclusive first listen of a special interview with Muhammad Ali's former business manager, Gene Kilroy. The last survivor from Ali's inner circle joined myself, Shane Hannan, for an hour full of great insight and never-before-told stories, such as this from just minutes before the rumble in the jungle when Ali fought George Foreman.
Ali had no fear.
And the time Ali went looking for Joe Frazier.
Ali gets out of the car, the cops said, "Where do you think you're going?" He said, "I'm looking for Joe Frazier. Where's Joe Frazier?"
Hear it first this Bank Holiday Sunday at 7 p.m. exclusively on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on offtheball.com or download the Go Loud app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
Right. Peter Smith, Director of Research at Sport Ireland, is with us now at 8:44 on this Thursday morning. Peter, you're very welcome. How are things?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. A report released yesterday, I think, raised a lot of eyebrows. We all knew that people were exercising a lot at the moment. I don't think many of us were prepared for the fact that more adults in Ireland are exercising than ever before.
We were somewhat surprised as well, I suppose. Just to give you some background, this is the second report we've done in the series since we've started to track participation in sport and recreational walking during the COVID crisis. And we've tracked it over since the end of February, over about 10 weeks now. And what we found is sort of pretty startling. And I think we've used the word unprecedented in terms of the level of activity. Let me give you a couple of examples of the scale of change that we're seeing. Just taking something like recreational walking, which is quite a stable measure. So we've been measuring sort of participation in recreational walking over the last sort of 15 years or so. And it rarely varies by more than 1% year on year. So last year, for example, between March and May, about 65% of the population were taking part in at least one recreational walk a week. That figure has now gone up to 83%. So that extra 17-18% is the equivalent of 650,000 extra walkers. With sport, obviously the scale is not quite as great, but we've seen the equivalent of about 250,000 people doing various activities. Now you must remember this is at a time when we're essentially in lockdown in terms of facility access, in terms of formal sports activity. So club activity is gone. So this is all about people getting out, engaging in running, in cycling, in hill walking, in sort of exercise. So at home exercise with online resources and so on. And the scale of the activity is as I say, is incredible. We also look at, for example, the fact that there are now about 10 percentage points of an increase in terms of the number of people who are taking part in both sport and recreational walking. So it's all good news, because I think the fact that people are getting out there and sort of looking after their health and well-being at a time of extraordinary change, I think is something that we should be thankful for.
What are the main reasons in terms of the psychology of the public for this? Is it a situation where people are looking to make themselves healthier? Is it a situation where people find that they just have more time? Is it a sense that people just want to get out of the house? Or have you managed to put your finger on why the pandemic has brought such a huge spike in these numbers?
I think you've hit a couple of the main reasons there. Mostly we find that in ordinary circumstances, one of the things that people describe as the barrier to them being active is time. Mm. And that's to do with time, whether it's in commute time, work time, time to look after family and so on. And clearly that sort of those set of circumstances have changed significantly in the current environment. The other issue there is that when we ask people what it is that makes them want to go out and be active, then the sort of things that they describe are health and well-being, looking after themselves, and also the social dimension. So it's not necessarily about things like competition or improving their athletic performance. It's really about sort of, you know, health and well-being, and which is perhaps one of the reasons why we're seeing, I think, such a spike in female activity, because they tend to be perhaps better aware of their health and fitness and so on issues. And certainly at the moment, when we started measuring participation in sport about 15 years ago, the gap in participation between men and women in sport was about 15%. That gap has now disappeared in the current context.
Right, okay. And it's also interesting as well when you're breaking down the different demographics that the 15 to 24 age group appears to have the biggest spike if you're breaking it down into age. Like that's very interesting. Like, do you have a reason for that? Is it because perhaps with age comes a bit more wisdom and older people are just have been looking after themselves a bit better over the last couple of years? Or why do you think younger people are now taking this opportunity to get into exercise more than everybody else?
Well, I think it's always been the case that younger people have been more active in sport. So there is a decline in participation in sport with age. I think what we're seeing again for young people at the moment who may be more impacted in terms of their available time than other groups, but certainly it would appear to be the case that they're using that time well. So the numbers that are taking part in sport and in recreational walking among that age group are again, as I said, they're at unprecedented levels. The challenge, of course, will be when things start to perhaps go back to normal, whether we will get something of a relapse in terms of activity levels. And I think that's something perhaps that there are obviously opportunities for some of the sports bodies here, because if you look at the activities that are thriving at the moment, you can see running, cycling, exercise, hill walking, outdoor activities that in terms of the sort of flexibility of offerings to people, so you can do them on your own terms, in your own time, in your own way, at your own level. So there are certainly opportunities here for sports bodies perhaps to tap into what clearly is a huge latent demand for people to look after themselves.
Peter, these are phenomenal figures and really the type of thing that you would hope the Department of Health are pouring over to see what we can do as a society to try and, again, to make sure that gap, the gender gap in particular, never reopens. But also, if you think about the impact that this might have, if it was to be maintained over a 5-year period or a 10-year period in the nation's health, it would save us billions, essentially, in a bunch of different ways, in the obesity crisis, diabetes, all sorts of other aspects that are going to have health, heart health, that are going to have a huge impact on our health system. The whole point of time, I think, is also fundamentally important here about how we change as a society to make sure that our people do have the opportunity to go out and have a half-hour walk or an hour walk every day, or at least every 2 days. That would involve better use of people working at home, which has an impact on rollout of rural broadband. It would also really help if we had more cycle lanes. Clearly, people want to cycle to work if that's going to be their exercise every day. So how hopeful are you that these figures actually start ringing massive alarm bells for policymakers and going, there's a big opportunity here now, right now, to mobilize the people who are out walking and out cycling and say, would you like a little bit more of this in your life? Well, then you need to do this, this, and this. And that we kind of start talking about this as a means of making Ireland a better place to live.
I'm hopeful in the extent that certainly the policy environment, I think, is very strongly positive towards the idea of sort of exercise and activity at the moment. If you think about even where we are in terms of what you were allowed out to do in the context of the current COVID crisis, exercise was one of the few things that you could do. So people in the policy system recognize its value and the contribution it makes to our health and well-being. I think also there's now a lot more discussion around the way in which we build our sort of cities and our environment. And you can see now where there's a lot of debate around the sort of opening up even of Dublin City in terms of making it more accessible to cyclists and so on. And obviously there are other sort of factors in that conversation, but I think it is good that we're seeing now that sort of that notion of having an environment that facilitates people and getting out and being active and doing something convenient, because most activity takes place near the home. Most activity, you know, people sort of get out and walk in the local roads, or they cycle around their neighborhood or whatever. So it's that sort of easy option that we need to introduce. And that may also involve sort of changing the way in which we look at how people travel to and from work, and as you say, the ability to be able to work sort of remotely and so on, and not have to engage in long commutes. I think we need to also look at the way in which we sort of engage in our development of sporting infrastructure. Like, I think we need to move towards a sort of a multi-facility type of approach, where a lot of activities are available to people at one locus, and that you can get families together doing different things and so on. So, yeah, I'm hopeful, because I think certainly there is a lot of energy and a lot of, positive attitude towards this out there, from certainly the conversations I'm having. A lot of people more engaged, a lot of different departments more engaged around the issue. And I think a recognition as well that, like you say, that the contribution to health, to well-being, to sort of savings, you must remember that as a society, we are aging considerably, and we know that activity tends to decline with age. So we have that challenge, that sort of force is acting against us. So, you know, we've got to get our act together, because we can't afford to continue to invest and plow money into sort of, you know, the health sort of treatment side of things. We've got to have a much more preventative approach to these things.
Can I ask you what you make then of the facilities that have been closed over the last while? How beneficial would it be for rugby clubs, for GAA clubs, for soccer pitches to be open as places where people could go for a walk? In some ways, this feels like it's a bit of a missed opportunity for some of those sports when their facilities are closed and people are crying out for a local facility. And certainly there's been a bubbling up of, maybe resentment is too strong a word, but certainly opinion from columnists about opening pitches for at least the local community to be able to go in and walk there, if not play sports.
Yeah, I think the issue of access to facilities of all sorts has always been something, you know, I mean, I think of the idea of educational facilities over the years and so on. I'm not sure that I want to totally get into a debate about the rights and wrongs of that. Like, I mean, as I say, I think, like, I mean, if you think of the activities that people are engaging in at the moment, they seem to be able to do them irrespective of the fact that the sort of these facilities are shut down. So, like, I mean, the fact that, like, I mean, clearly now we have new people engaging in various activities like running and cycling and exercising and so on, and that didn't do it before. We have also people presumably who are transferring from other sports that have been closed off to them. So I think what we're seeing is a fact that people will find a way to do things if they have the particular sort of limiting factor is this issue of time and their sort of notion of the time available to them. And, I mean, one of the interesting things that I found actually just looking at the data again this morning, we looked at, you know, a group, for example, like the 35 to 44 year old group. And we asked a question, or there was a question asked in the survey about whether or not there were children under 18 in the household. And we found that where there were children in the household, those 35 to 44 year olds were more likely to be more active than where there weren't. Now, my reading of this, and it's an inference that I'm making, is that, like, I mean, these are probably parents talking about their own children, and that it's parents who are now probably engaging with their children, but also having the opportunity to get out on their own. So I think there's a lot of good stuff here. And one of the things we're doing is we're going to expand the survey over the next 3.5 months. So as the country opens up, we're going to sort of look to see how these patterns of activity change, not just overall, but also among different groups. So we're looking at, for example, people working in different sectors of society and when these sectors start to open up. And we're looking, obviously, at the aspects of social participation in sport as well downstream. So we'll be looking at things like volunteering and membership and attendance at events. And we'll be looking at sort of much more around the sort of the levels of activity and so on. So there's a lot of, there'll be a lot of interesting stuff, I think, emerging over the next few months around this particular tracking exercise that we're engaged.
We spent an hour with Philip Brown yesterday. The piece is about to broadcast just after 9 o'clock, and he's talking about the existential threat that clubs face. And he actually mentioned volunteers, and the, number one, he talks about the difficulty of starting a new club. Very, very difficult to do. So you need to protect the ones that are there and not let them go. But volunteers, for example, who might have been running teams and spending their time in the past making sandwiches, washing kits, lining pitches, cutting grass, all of a sudden they're finding that actually they want to go out and have a cycle or go for a run or spend more time with their kids, because that's what the habit that they've got into over the last 10 weeks. And it will be very interesting to see if those people actually do end up going back to doing the level of volunteerism that they did in the past. I just wanted to mention one point, though, because I fall into that demographic that you were just talking about there. We have three kids who we are getting out and making sure that they're getting exercise every day, because otherwise they go completely crazy if we don't actually get them out for a run. On a personal level, you notice that. Yeah, exactly. And so as a result, I'm also going out every day for a cycle. And it's been noticeable, 5 weeks ago, the roads were completely empty and it was safe and you could cycle away and there was never any sense of any fear about the cars. That fear is coming back because the cycle lanes are very busy and the roads are getting much busier. And we actually don't really have the cycling infrastructure for the amount of people, it seems, who want to do it. So you would hope that the policymakers are looking at this going, actually, if we invest loads of money in cycle lanes, people are going to use them.
I totally agree with you. The area I live in myself, up in Sandyford, there's some little country roads, and I can notice when I'm out running that the traffic is becoming a challenge, because again, this idea of trying to maintain a physical distancing, which people are doing, to be fair, I think most people are making an effort, but obviously sometimes it pushes you out onto a road, which, if the traffic starts to build up, it will be a little more dangerous and and some people wear headphones and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I hope we don't start to see any emerging incidents around that. And I hope people obviously stay safe and stay conscious of the fact that the traffic is building up while still maintaining their levels of activity. But I think on the other point you made about the volunteering, I would agree. I know a number of people who I've spoken to who are, as it were, committed volunteers over the years that would have been involved in all of those aspects of the club. And they have said exactly what you were saying there, that they have had the opportunity now to sort of, to tone all that down, to concentrate a little bit more on themselves, to get out and get active. And suddenly they find that they have been fitter. And it will be a very interesting question as to whether or not, the habits that they're forming now will become so ingrained that maybe it would be challenged to re-engage with that volunteering. Yeah. As I say, that's something we will be looking at as we go forward with this survey over the next sort of 3.5 months or so.
Listen, Peter, the figures are very encouraging. Thanks a million for popping on and taking a call this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Peter Smith there, Director of Research with Sport Ireland.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.